Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Our next guests are John Freeman and James Wood. Freeman is the former editor of the literary journal Granta, and he's launching a new literary magazine called Freeman's. James Wood is the celebrated book critic, staff writer at The New Yorker, literary professor at Harvard, and author of numerous books, the latest of which is The Nearest Thing to Life. James Wood and John Freeman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we should say that you'll both be at Harvard Bookstore tonight discussing the arrival of Freeman's. And let me sort of draw back the curtain here a little bit for listeners, because, John, during the break, you were just saying that there are more than maybe 1,000 literary magazines across the United States now.
Yes, there are more magazines than there are probably some species.
And so why another one? Why a new one? Why Freeman's?
Well, as Edward O. Wilson would say, biodiversity is the key. And so when there are more than 1,000, that's actually a sign that our literary culture is healthy. I think literary magazines are basically the defenders of marginality. And marginality is one of the key strengths of writers. If you're a writer, you don't want to normalize. You want to take the things which are the most different about you and turn them into strengths. And literary magazines protect that space. They don't aim for thousands of readers. They aim for hundreds. They're irregular. And Boston has a huge tradition. The oldest long-standing literary magazine in the country, the North American Review, was started here 200 years ago by William Hudson, the guy who invented the term the Athens in America. And so there's been a trend, at least in Boston, but around the country, of, I think, creating these spaces so that writers can flourish.
All right. So I love that phrase, defenders of marginality. I mean, James Wood, I was reading a Q&A that you had done with Slate, I believe, not that long ago, and you were talking about your days at the New Republic and how you liked sort of the pugilistic attitude of smaller journals. I mean, is that sort of one of the current sort of reasons for being of small literary journals?
I think John's exactly right, and there is a danger in occupying the mainstream in the way that a magazine like The New Yorker does so well, but also so, you know, indomitably. Looking at what John has put together in this first edition, I'm struck by how many names I don't know and how diverse and global it is as a group of people, and my only disappointment is that it's going to be twice a year. I think, you know, we need it sort of four times a year, or one or six times a year. Just, you know,
the literary critic speaks already, and he wants more.
Sure.
So, John Freeman, I mean, so tell us a little bit more about Freeman's, because it's organized. The anthologies are going to be organized around a theme. I've seen you in a previous interview. You said, is it a literary anthology? Is it something new? You called it maybe a journalology or an
anthojournal.
Journal?
Yeah. I'm going to be number one on the New York Times anthojournalist all by itself. No, I thought there's always room for more journals, I think largely because there are readers looking for good curatorial editing. And I'm not saying necessarily I'm the best at this, but this is what I chose. I think we're in this world now where we're overwhelmed by choice. We have a million websites to choose from. We have Goodreads pelting us with things. We have more choice than ever, but we also are sort of drowning in a lack of guidance. And that's why, as much as James says The New Yorker is in a dangerous space by being sort of in the center, he has an amazing seat as a critic there because he can point people to, say, Lydia Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so this journal is an attempt to try to create a doorway for some readers, you know, and in some ways on the outside of this door is Haruki Murakami and Dave Eggers and Louise Erdrich, and now, thanks to people like James, Lydia Davis, you know, who are names to readers.
Right, I was going to ask you about that because those big names that are included in this first edition, this first issue of Freeman's, I mean, they have multiple other platforms that they can publish in. They've all been in The New Yorker, practically,
right.
Very successful novelists, et cetera. So, I mean, you answered the question I was going to ask, which is why include them if really the goal overall for a new a project like yours is defending marginalities, you said, because these are not writers who are in the margin at all.
But they are still marginal. That's the wonderful thing about someone like Lydia Davis. She's still an extremely strange writer. The piece that she's written for this is a 24,000-word essay about learning Norwegian without a dictionary by reading the most difficult recently published Norwegian novel by Dag Solstad. Mm. And it's like watching someone take off into the Arctic tundra with nothing but her German heritage and a little bit of gerunds, you know, in her back pocket. And she managed to make it to the pole simply by using her mind. Mm. It's an amazing piece about the ways that our mind arrives in places before us by decoding language. And yeah, I want people like Lydia Davis in here because I think too often when you have writers that become successful, Murakami's another one, Dave Eggers, who's in here, is another. We tend to forget how odd they are, and that their oddness is actually what is basically makes them essential to us.
Yeah, James, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I take seriously this thing about marginality, even among sort of famous writers. I mean, okay, Lydia Davis is famous. It would seem that she doesn't need any more boosting than she already has, but. You'd probably be surprised by how few copies of each individual book she sells. I'm often reviewing people at The New Yorker who, I'm thinking of two writers in the last year, Amit Chowdhury and Samantha Harvey, an English writer who I think my piece was the only review that her novel received in America, only print review. You know, people can be can have won prizes and have reasonably famous names and still be, yes, essentially marginal if one doesn't want to claim too much. You know, it's not about claiming a political sympathy it's not that kind of marginality, but it's trying to, I understand what John's talking about. It's trying to reclaim, a space that is somehow beyond questions of advances and sales and prizes, these contemporary markers of success, and to return to something like literature in its innocent state.
Right. Well, so let me just challenge both of you a little bit here, because I mean I am inspired by this idea of defensive marginality in a world where we do have so much diversity, so much choice, and yet everything always seems to, you know, because of lots of cultural forces regress to some kind of mean. But on the other hand, does any of this really even matter if not that many readers are actually reading, you know, all the 1,000 literary journals out there? I mean, I was reading a 2010 piece that was in Mother Jones, written by Ted Genoways, who was at that time editor of the Virginia Quarterly Review. And this is in 2010, and he wrote that that there were maybe more than 820 creative writing programs in the United States. And if each of those programs had maybe 5 or 10 new students per year, they have some 60,000 new writers coming out into the world in a decade. But the average literary magazine maybe prints fewer than 1,500 copies. Those are the ones that actually still are in physical print. Mm. So there aren't, I mean, there are so many writers, but not even that many readers of what's already in existence. So I guess that's my very long-winded way of saying is, when it comes down to the numbers which are still potent, does it really even matter if you're not that many people are seeing what you're putting out there?
Well, I think we're talking not about democracy, or something like sales where we're crowdsourcing something. We're talking about beauty. And beauty is not something that you measure in volume. It's about singularity. And a literary journal exists, again, I think, to just create a doorway from readers to certain writers and writers to certain topics. So even Lydia Davis, again, popular, probably has lots of choice, did not have a lot of takers who want a 24,000-word essay about learning Norwegian. But we have to give writers the space to roam and to create ideas. And I think, you know, if you look at the history of literary journals, Emerson's The Dial, it ran for just 4 years. The Evergreen Review, its second issue, which introduced so many of those Beat Generation writers, Gary Snyder, Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, to readers. It may not be the number of readers. It might be the who those readers are. And the first issue of the Evergreen Review had Jean-Paul Sartre. It had Samuel Beckett. Mm. It had writers that basically had not yet entirely entered U.S. publishing.
Well, think of some of the early granters that did the Dirty Realist writers and so on.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that, James Wood. What are you thinking about that?
Well, I'm thinking of granter because John was a wonderful editor of that magazine, mm-hmm. and in an earlier incarnation under Bill Buford's editorship, it was influential, particularly, say, for someone like me, growing up in Britain, who wasn't in touch in any way. I was young anyway, in touch with sort of American literary culture. It precisely, to use John's word, curated, put together a new generation of sort of minimalist, so-called dirty realist American writers, Carver and Tobias Wolff and so on. And it was a revelation. There was that, and indeed it wasn't just a revelation. That was the only conduit. If you were, say, a 16-year-old who was excited about contemporary literature, it was probably more possible to get hold of granter at the local bookshop and suddenly read 15 new American short story writers than to get the individual volumes themselves.
Right, right. So let's talk for a moment, if we can, about the organizing theme for this first issue of Freeman's, because it's about arrival. I mean, the subhead is Freeman's The Best New Writing on Arrival. What is it about this concept of arrival, or how do you define it for this issue?
Well, we all arrive somewhere. We all arrive into the world at some point. We all encounter space, things, senses. And I find writing today, the one thing it lacks when it lacks something is a sense of the central relationship between ourselves as physical organisms and the world. We spend so much time in front of computers looking at sort of data, screens, virtual realities, that I think we have to constantly be reminded as readers and also as consumers that our relationship to the physical world matters. Our interactions with the physical world and space matters. And so I wanted to reclaim that space, reclaim writing about places, reclaim the fact that many of the writers that are in this issue are not from one place or other, but are sort of caught between, like Alexander Hemin, mm-hmm. someone that James wrote about in The Fun Stuff. So I think it's a sort of call to arms that narrative, storytelling, observance of the natural world and the real world, the world that we live in and move in and breathe in, is significant and it matters, and that important stories can be told out of that space.
Yeah. In the last couple seconds that we have, James Wood, does that fire up your imagination as a critic, as a potent inspiration, a potent thing for writing?
Well, it does, and I mean, not just when John's talking about the world, I think also look at what he's putting into this, at least this first edition. It's truly the world. I mean, this is an international collection. There are people writing from Palestine, Caribbean. It's I'm excited because I think there's going to be, and he made clear that he was doing this when he was an editor of Granter too, there's going to be an international vision here, not merely an American one, very much open to the world.
Well, James Wood is a staff writer at The New Yorker and professor at Harvard University, and John Freeman, former editor at Granta and founding editor of the new literary journal Freeman's. Thank you both so much for coming in. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
And I should say both of them will be at Harvard Bookstore tonight in an event launching the new Freeman's Journal.